And this conversation is with the special and specialist legal journalist for News 24, Karen Maughan, who has obviously, Karen, recovered from COVID. Welcome back. You had us all worried.
Thank you. Thank you so much for your very sweet messages. I mean, it was super kind of you to like reach out to me, and I just really appreciate it. So it's good to be back. And yeah, just
I mean, in a way, given a justifiable level of concern when you went into hospital, it's remarkable that you're able to talk to us, because we approach folk who've had COVID and have sort of 3 weeks beyond the infectious period, and they still don't feel strong enough to chat on the radio.
I think I was very lucky, and I do think that having the vaccine, even though it was sort of out of the time limit where it's supposed to be at its most effective, had a major difference, you know, a major impact for me. But I definitely am not, you know, at this point, and let's see how we go dealing with the kind of complications that I know a lot of other people have dealt with, and I'm really grateful for that.
I haven't talked about the judgment in the Western Cape High Court last week involving the public protector's attempt to have the parliamentary inquiry into her fitness to hold office set aside. And she lost on a significant number of points. She won on 2 points, one of which is insignificant. The rule stating that she's not allowed full representation, legal representation, because as the public protector, you have to be a qualified lawyer, therefore you don't need legal representation. And the judges said rubbish, but that's an easy one to fix. The other one, though, is more complicated, because what she won was a statement, a judgment from the High Court, saying that a judge cannot be on the independent panel which first looks into the matter and then refers it to Parliament. And there was a judge, a retired constitutional court judge, on that original panel, which you can imagine that the public protector's camp are jumping up and down with joy, because they'll be able to argue, probably with a great deal of force and conviction, that the process has to start again, because the recommendation of that independent panel is null and void because a judge sat on it.
Absolutely. And I think that's why, you know, we saw a lot of mixed messages coming out last week about what the substantive effect of that judgment was. We now know that the speaker is seeking legal advice, you know, having attempted to sort of get a sense from the lawyers involved as to what the next move would be. Everyone is very tight-lipped, and it's very clear that the public protector, if there is a move to proceed with this, will bring some kind of interdict to stop it from proceeding on exactly the basis that you're raising. But essentially, the court's finding makes it very clear that anything that flowed from that panel, including the report saying that there was prima facie evidence, which of course Parliament then voted on and effectively, you know, put the inquiry in place, is the fruit of the poison tree. That there has been a finding of illegality and unconstitutionality, and that the Parliament essentially needs to go back, correct the rule, and embark on that process effectively de novo in order for it to be legal. So Parliament now needs to make a decision. Does it do that? Does it embark? Does it start from scratch? Does it proceed and run the risk of an interdict and a subsequent long, convoluted legal process, which I think they would want to avoid? Or is it going to appeal this judgment and then be embroiled in litigation that could have the impact of effectively slowing this inquiry from proceeding? So in the moment, we are sitting in legal treacle. And unfortunately, John, I think the point is that the judgment doesn't really make it clear as to what its own implications may be. And that's one of the difficulties that everyone in this process is sitting with.
Because I've read opinions from people who are qualified to offer opinions, and opinions have been shared with me by judges of my acquaintance, and there's a lot of doubt about the Bartman judgment, which was unanimous, but it was delivered by Judge Elizabeth Bartman. They feel that the issue about the judge was a legal nonsense and is easily challengeable. But either way, it goes to appeal and perhaps counter-appeal, and it drags things out. And before we know where we are, the protector's term has expired and all of this is moot.
And that's the difficulty. I mean, there was always going to be some form of legal challenge around this. This is a completely unique situation. We haven't seen the impeachment of a head of a Chapter 9 institution. before. 12 points, I think, were raised by the public protector in her challenge. She's effectively succeeded in two of them. But the lack of clarity, which I think is a big difficulty with the judgment, has now put this kind of limbo in place, which you rightly contend, and I think you completely are right on this, could have the impact of slowing this process down significantly. But I mean, if one considers about, you know, the way in which, for instance, Judge Mpati was on the PIC inquiry, Judge Zondo in the commission, this reticence about judges being part of inquiry processes has very far-reaching implications. And on a principle level, I think it is vitally important that there is some sense of legal certainty obtained here, because this judgment, if it stands unchallenged, could very well be a springboard to kind of legal challenges to other processes and inquiries, which may have far-reaching implications beyond this.
And then on to another Jacob Zuma matter. He's due next week to argue, well, his lawyers are due next week to argue the special P application for his acquittal on those arms deal-related corruption charges. And the judge is going to make a ruling as to whether the hearing is going to be virtual or whether Jacob Zuma can be present. And Jacob Zuma is making it quite clear that he refuses to accede to a virtual hearing. So if Judge Kuhn does rule that it must be virtual, then there's an appeal and an appeal against the appeal and an application to appeal the appeal. And again, there are further delays.
You know, one really has to have deep sympathy for Judge Peter Kuhn, because he's really between a rock and a hard place. I mean, the NPA is raising significant security concerns. They say they've been given certain levels of assurances by law enforcement that, you know, if there's any kind of demonstration or protest or unrest linked to this court case, which, you know, they're suggesting there may very well be, given there's been these public calls for people to come to the court on the day of the hearing, etc., you know, he runs the risk of being, you know, accused of not taking the security threat or the COVID threat attached to that kind of process seriously. On the other hand, you very rightly point out, he will almost certainly face some form of litigation or challenge, and that will further delay the hearing of the special plea, which the NPA itself has argued needs to be decided as soon as possible. Billy Downer has effectively said that this is nothing more than a delaying tactic. And it is yet another attempt by Zuma to have this case thrown out before he even really needs to answer to it. But whatever Kuhn decides, you know, there's going to be a sense in which, you know, possibly, you know, there's going to be consequences. So he's asked for submissions from all the parties. He will make a decision tomorrow and make the parties aware of what that decision is. But, you know, if he feels that he has gotten assurances from law enforcement that there will be a level of control, he may very well decide to make this an in-person hearing, but with certain prerequisites in place to prevent, COVID risks and to prevent security threats.
Karen Maughan, specialist legal journalist with News 24. Thank you.